Welcome to Audio Notes. I'm David Finkel, Artistic Director of Music at Menlo, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce you to the music you'll be hearing at the festival this summer. This season, we've designed one of our richest and most enchanting musical journeys yet. Russian Reflections illuminates the great dialogue between Russia and the West, from which Russian classical music grew into one of the most beloved of all musical traditions. Russia's musical culture is as elusive as it is irresistible. The soul of Russian music is impossible to capture with words. It is utterly unique. No one could have invented such a confoundingly glorious tradition. Russia's music is the sui generis expression of her people's experiences. Yet at the same time, many of the elements that distinguish Russian music ultimately defy cultural boundaries: love and death, passion and pathos, struggle and triumph. This summer's seven concert programs bring together Russian and Western composers to magnify the universal resonance of Russia's musical culture. We'll hear the romantic pathos of Rachmaninoff and Shostakovich alongside Schumann, Fauré, and Dvorak. We'll encounter the sophisticated elegance of Tchaikovsky next to music by Mozart and Mendelssohn. We'll marvel at the impeccable craftsmanship of Prokofiev, Tanayev, and Johannes Brahms. Each of these juxtapositions will cast Russia's musical identity into sharp relief, while also revealing an essential character that transcends any cultural divide. Audio notes are designed to enhance your enjoyment and deepen your appreciation of the music you'll be hearing at the festival. I'll be joined by Artistic Co-Director Wu Han, Audio Notes author and producer Patrick Castillo, and some of this season's festival artists to offer historical and cultural context and a variety of perspectives on this summer's concert programs. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to seeing you at the concerts. The compositional and emotional elements that distinguish Russian musical culture, its opulence, pathos, lyricism, and more, resonate far and wide. This summer's second concert program delves into one of these characteristically Russian elements and reveals it to be universal. Dark passions permeate the music of Dmitri Shostakovich and Anton Arensky, whose respective first piano trios bookend the program. Music by these composers' Central European counterparts echoes Shostakovich's and Arensky's turbulent strains. Alongside these seminal figures of Russian music, the program features Erno von Dohnányi's second piano quintet and Gustav Mahler's piano quartet, the great symphonist's sole instrumental chamber work. The Russian pianist and composer Dmitri Shostakovich produced some of the 20th century's most fiercely expressive music. His body of work is even more compelling when considered in the context of the difficult circumstances surrounding his life and career. Shostakovich's name has become virtually synonymous with the intensity of his musical reaction to Stalinism. His work serves as a musical chronicle of the harsh social conditions that followed the 1917 October Revolution and life under Stalin's regime. Shostakovich's response to his socio-political climate is manifested in his oeuvre of 15 symphonies, 15 string quartets, and myriad other works, which collectively represent one of the 20th century's most significant artistic achievements.
Shostakovich composed his first piano trio while still a student at the St. Petersburg Conservatory. Like other products of his adolescence, the trio shows the promise of a gifted young composer, but more than that, presages the hallmarks of his later maturity.
This is a piece that he wrote when he was 17. It's in one movement. It's rather free and episodic, but at the same time, there are these foreshadowings of the mature Shostakovich.
Pianist Michael Brown.
I think that grotesque and stark quality that's in even this early trio, it really does stay with his language his whole life. If you take a broad view of his entire canon, this was things he kept coming back to and things that really, I think, informed his whole unique compositional voice.
A passive listener might find the trio's constant shifts in tempo erratic and disorienting. But the work's fragmented shape is essential to its overall character. and is moreover held together by its musical materials. The most important of these appears in the first measure. The cello presents a simple motif, three descending half steps, which is echoed by the violin, to commence a long, sinewy melody of its own. Those three notes contain the trio's genetic code. The trio abruptly picks up speed, and hints of the sardonic smirk that characterizes much of Shostakovich's later work appear. Just as abruptly, the andante music returns, now hypnotically centered on the opening three-note motif. At the following Allegro episode, the cello parlays the descending three-note motif into a clipped staccato melody. The tempo quickens, momentum builds, then suddenly breaks to adagio once again. The cello transforms the allegro staccato melody into a slow legato utterance. The piano punctuates the adagio passage with soft, undulating chords. This figure continues into the subsequent andante section, as the cello introduces a new melodic idea. What follows is the trio's most beguiling music. Yet the attentive listener will observe recurrences of the three-note motif, like Waldo mischievously hiding behind the set of a love scene. The legato version of the previous melody returns, now in the violin, and somehow suggesting a wry smile. The ear suspects a sly duplicity, as though the cello's earlier heartfelt utterance were not wholly ingenuous. From here, the trio builds steadily, moderato, then allegro, and finally, prestissimo fantastico, with the three-note motif continuing to permeate the music's constantly evolving textures. Shostakovich indulges a brief remembrance of the opening andante. before arriving at the trio's radiant climax. But by now, the ear is dizzy from Shostakovich's wiles. The soaring strings and triumphantly clanging piano chords, signals, one would think, of jubilation, should perhaps be met more warily. Such subterfuge would later become an existentially vital part of Shostakovich's craft. In 1937, following official criticism of his opera, Lady Macbeth of the Mtsensk District, Shostakovich designed his Fifth Symphony to outwardly gratify the Communist Party while furtively expressing his political angst. The piano trio in C minor, composed in Shostakovich's 18th year, contains early signs of the technique and artistic fortitude on which his greatness would be founded.
The program continues with music by the Hungarian composer Ernő von Dohnányi.
Excepting perhaps Franz Liszt, Dohnányi must be regarded as the most versatile musician to come from Hungary. He was, in addition to being a great composer, one of history's greatest pianists. He achieved particular notoriety for performing Beethoven's complete piano music in one season, and undertaking all 27 of Mozart's piano concerti in another. Dohnányi was moreover a supremely gifted conductor and an influential teacher and administrator as well, playing a crucial role in building Hungary's musical culture in the first half of the 20th century. But unlike his countrymen, Bartók and Kodály, Dohnányi didn't mine Hungarian folk music for his own compositional vocabulary, which has probably complicated his place in history somewhat, in that he was the chief architect of Hungary's musical landscape, but has inevitably been overshadowed in this respect by those composers who more literally gave Hungary its musical voice. Dohnányi's music, instead, celebrates the romantic legacy of Johannes Brahms and Robert Schumann. His two piano quintets, the Quintet in C minor, Opus 1, and the Quintet in E flat minor, Opus 26, composed 2 decades later, can be heard as descendants of the quintets of Schumann, Brahms, and Dvorak, which essentially defined the genre. The Opus 26 quintet's opening Allegro non troppo begins with an ominous theme, stated in octaves, sotto voce, by the first violin and cello, over rumbling pianissimo triplets in the piano, like distant storm clouds. Urgent triplets in the second violin clear the way for a chordal gesture in the piano, which turns quickly from an earnest sigh to an understated hurrah. The music becomes harmonically restive, a characteristic of the quintet that Dohnányi will continue to probe over its 3 movements, before subsiding in quiet tremolando in the viola. As the piano issues a lyrical statement of the opening theme, the strings expand to a pseudo-orchestral texture. ¶¶ The first violin introduces the dolce second theme, marked by a descending leap of a seventh and followed by a crooning chromatic ascent. But this music retains some of the nervous energy that preceded it, with continuing oscillations in the piano accompaniment and further harmonic restlessness. The piano's chordal gesture abruptly returns, launching the movement into its inclement development section. Overlapping string lines and clanging piano chords conjure waves crashing ashore. The movement's volatility is epitomized by its most glorious moment. As the storm seems to approach its fiercest roar, the music enters without warning into a leggero passage. String pizzicati and nimble piano figurations surround the viola's restatement of the opening theme, now reimagined as a broad, generous, major key musical statement. Dohnányi has masterfully exploited the same thematic idea to encompass dark passions and rapturous ecstasy. In its final breaths, the movement returns the theme to E-flat minor, but now at the luxurious pace of the viola's major key version. The movement's final cadence, curiously, is an E-flat major. The second movement intermezzo resembles a waltz in its melodic elegance and triple meter gait, but with a suggestion of something vaguely sinister afoot. The theme, set in the dark hue of the viola, is introduced with three enigmatic repeated notes. The tempo is a bit rushed and agitated for a waltz. And as in the first movement, the music is harmonically unsettled. Soon, this music is transformed into a psychedelic presto. The following section, marked Rubato e Capriccioso, takes the theme on an even more bizarre turn. Thank you. Further variations ensue, ending with one in cut time, divorcing the waltz even from its characteristic triple meter. Any illusion of a waltz is now completely dissolved, revealing this brief movement to be a thing of surprising gravity. Echoing the mystery of the first movement's final measure, the intermezzo ends with an abrupt shift to A flat minor. The quintet's moderato finale begins with a fugue, its melancholy subject introduced by the cello, espressivo ma sotto voce, and followed in turn by the viola, second violin, and first violin. The fugue's quiet introspection escalates, briefly, to a full-voiced anguish, before the piano enters with a hymn-like chorale. Soon the strings enter the sublime realm of the piano chorale with material derived from the fugue, now transfigured into a seraphic vision. The rapture is fleeting. The piano reintroduces the ominous first movement theme, which propels the ensuing animato section. This remembrance of previous turmoil augurs crisis in paradise. As the movement continues, Dohnányi unites this theme with the finale's opening fugue subject, fashioning them into an overpowering statement. It seems as though the promise of paradise has been lost, subsumed into the pandemonium of what came before. But light triumphs over dark, as this newly unified musical idea ultimately emerges as an utterance of resplendent beauty. The quintet finally ends unequivocally in E flat major. One of the mightiest musical voices of the late Romantic period is that of the Austrian composer and conductor Gustav Mahler. Mahler's epic cycle of 9 symphonies, plus a 10th left unfinished at his death, stand among the most powerful and intensely personal statements in the Western canon. In addition to his symphonies, Mahler left a significant catalog of vocal pieces, many with orchestra, which likewise rank among the definitive works of the turn of the 20th century. With each of his colossal symphonies and song cycles, Mahler created a vast musical world, in which he poured heart-rending expressions of profound joy and sorrow, love and fear, wonder and anxiety at the world around him, and deep reflections on the human condition, in turns fatalistic and sublime.
Mahler produced only one chamber work before going on to stake his claim in the pantheon of great symphonic composers. In the late 1870s, while still a teenager, he composed a movement for piano quartet, projected as the first movement of a multi-movement work, which he abandoned 24 measures into the second movement. The quartet was not published or performed until nearly a century later.
The quartet is a sonata-form movement built on 3 contrasting themes. The first is stated by the piano amidst ominous introductory chords, then taken up in short order by the strings. The more turbulent second theme is not, as per sonata form convention, set in a contrasting key, but rather also in A minor. Despite remaining in the home key, Mahler distinguishes the new theme with chromatic melodic descents. A third musical idea closes the exposition. As if to counteract the gravity of A minor, this theme modulates restlessly. Each of these materials is skillfully woven together in the impassioned development section. The movement's most immediately striking feature is the brief but searing violin cadenza that appears near the work's conclusion. Mahler instructs the violinist to play ungemein rubato und leidenschaftlich, uncommonly rubato and passionate. In the wake of all that preceded it, this cadenza seems to distill the entire work's emotional intensity into one vehement cry. Given its place in Mahler's oeuvre, this single-movement piano quartet is routinely dismissed as a student work, an assessment that warrants closer examination. The expressive precision of its thematic materials and such moments as the violin cadenza reveal the work to be more than a merely competent student exercise. The work offers an informative lens into the gravitas and ferocity latent in the adolescent Mahler, soon to be unleashed in one of the 20th century's most significant bodies of work.
The program concludes with the Piano Trio No. 1 in D minor, Opus 32, by the Russian composer, pianist, and conductor Anton Arensky.
If he tends to be overshadowed by such towering figures as Tchaikovsky and Rachmaninoff, Anton Arensky must nevertheless be regarded in his own right as a seminal figure in Russian music history. He was a musician of unassailable skill, graduating from the St. Petersburg Conservatory in 1882 with a gold medal, and, more significantly, the confidence and endorsement of his teacher, Rimsky-Korsakov. Following the completion of his studies, Arensky was immediately appointed professor of harmony and counterpoint at the Moscow Conservatory, where his students included both Rachmaninoff and Scriabin. His relocation to Moscow also brought him into the social and professional circles of Tchaikovsky and Sergei Taneyev. Arensky's output reflects a broad range of influences, both classically Western and traditionally Russian. His piano concerto betrays a fascination with Chopin. The Piano Trio No. 1 in D minor, Opus 32, audibly nods to the D minor trio of Felix Mendelssohn. Elsewhere in his catalog, elements of Russian folk song and liturgical music emerge. The unifying element of Arensky's language is his instinct for melody. His ear for evocative keyboard textures is also a prevailing hallmark of much of his work. Given these qualities, Arensky primarily excelled in the composition of songs and piano miniatures. These attributes likewise color the Opus 32 Trio, Arensky's most finely wrought and best-known large-scale composition. Above a burbling piano accompaniment, the violin presents the Allegro Moderato's brooding first theme, a long, emotive statement whose arching melodic contour simultaneously bespeaks passion and pathos. After a sudden impassioned outburst, the piano assumes the theme. An upbeat, elegant music takes over. But just as quickly becomes tumultuous as the cello and violin in turn introduce the broad, sweeping second theme. ¶¶ In the movement's development section, Arensky assembles a mosaic of fragments of thematic material from the exposition. The ensemble dynamic, here as throughout the movement, sets the violin and cello together as a counterbalance to the piano's gravitational pull. All three voices truly come together only as the development section hurtles inexorably towards the rapturous recapitulation. The specter of Mendelssohn, vaguely audible in the first movement, becomes more so in the trio's scherzo. This music's blithe puckishness might recall that composer's signature Midsummer Night's Dream-style scherzi, but seems somehow more manic. Nor, as the movement progresses, does it remain as light on its feet as Mendelssohn's scherzo. Arensky's is somehow brawnier, like an offensive lineman dancing a waltz, but with surprising gracefulness. Arensky composed the piano trio in memory of the Russian cellist Karl Davidov, who had died in 1889. Accordingly, the trio's third movement elegy begins with a mournful cello solo, underpinned by the slightest suggestion of a funeral march in the piano accompaniment. Later, Arensky contrasts the movement's prevailing sorrow with a glimmering passage in G major. The work concludes with a vigorous allegro non troppo finale. The main allegro section is offset partway through by a gentle andante. Arensky revisits the music of the elegy, as if to honor Davidoff a final time. The finale also features a solemn remembrance of the trio's first movement. Before arriving at the work's powerful conclusion. Audio Notes is authored and produced by Patrick Castillo and narrated by David Finkel, Patrick Castillo, and Wu Han. Additional mastering is provided by Dahong Situ. Musical excerpts on this disc appear courtesy of the following artists and organizations. Rachmaninoff's Suite No. 2, performed by Martha Argerich and Nelson Friere, and Mahler's Piano Quartet, performed by Daniel Hope, Paul Neubauer, David Finkel, and Wu Han, appear courtesy of Deutsche Grammophon. Tchaikovsky's Serenade for Strings, performed by Choliang Lin, Ida Kavafian, Arno Sussman, Aaron Boyd, Areta Jula, Yura Lee, Kristen Lee, Sean Lee, Nicholas Dautricor, Richard O'Neill, Xinyun Huang, Steven Tenenbaum, Pierre Lapointe, Dane Johansson, Nicholas Kanalakis, Mihai Marika, and Kurt Marocki. Shostakovich's Piano Trio No. 1, performed by Ida Kavafian, Nicholas Alstedt, and Anne-Marie McDermott. Dohnányi's Piano Quintet No. 2, performed by Anne-Marie McDermott and the Orion String Quartet. And Arensky's Piano Trio No. 1, performed by Oskar Shumsky, Leslie Parnas, and Emmanuel Axe, appear courtesy of the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. Scriabin's Preludes and Vers la Flamme are performed by Lucille Chung and appear courtesy of the artist. Stravinsky's The Rite of Spring is performed by Gilbert Kalish and Wu Han and appears courtesy of Music at Menlo Live. Audio Notes is a copyrighted production of Artist Led.